Welcome to Catalyze, the Connected Leaders Academy virtual conference designed to reshape your vision of transformation. As we navigate the evolving business landscape, our speakers will unveil innovative strategies to manage and initiate change. Prepare to adapt, innovate, and lead, ensuring your role as a catalyst in this transformative era.
How you doing? Did you know that the thing you hate most may be your secret source of joy? I know it sounds crazy, but I'm Shiraz. I'm a reality interventionist. And this is something I've discovered through my journey that's applying to so many people without their knowledge. And in the next little while, I'm going to explain how it works to you. I'm going to tell you a story that's probably not about what you think it's going to be about. And wrap it all up with some new concepts about how reality works for you. So first of all, I would like to thank Jose for inviting me to speak at this event. I really admire Jose. He's done so much in so little time, and he's just such a genuine, wonderful person. He welcomed me to the live CLA event a little while ago, and he just gave me that shot because it was a one spot to fill with the speaker lineup, and there were a whole bunch of people to choose from, and just the way we connected, he decided, well, I'm going to give you a shot. And I made sure that he was very, very happy with the choice. So thank you, Jose. And I'd like to thank you for being here. Because one thing I've realized about entrepreneurs is a lot of us live in an entrepreneurial world. So we're hanging out with the same kind of people. And we forget that 90% of the people in the world are just getting by. They're just taking what life throws at them. They think this is all there is. And they're not striving for more. They're not striving for greatness. So you're already in the top 10% of the world that's looking for more out of life. So I just want to thank you and honor you for being here today. So my story starts when I was born, because my father was half Indian, half Malaysian, and my mom was South African. She's a Zulu tribe with Dutch ancestry because apartheid. So I'm this mutt. And I present mostly as Black or Indian to people, but I have been mistaken for Brazilian, Moroccan, Egyptian. There's a whole bunch of things. So, but mostly Black or Indian. And that's all cool, except that it meant that growing up, I got subjected to a lot of both Black and Indian racial slurs. I got to have them both. It wasn't so bad in grade school and high school, though it did occur. The racism really kicked in when I started traveling. I remember coming back from Brazil with a bunch of my friends, and after we went through customs, a customs agent came up to me and says, we need to ask you more questions. So I looked at my friends and said, hey, they need to ask us more questions. And he said, no, not them, just you. And I looked at my friends who were white, and I'm Black, and I'm like, oh, okay. And after they finished with the questions, I went to see my friends, and they're like, what just happened? They said, you know, the Black guy with the white people, what's he doing, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh my God, I'm so sorry that that happened. I said, it's just what happens. After that, every time I crossed the border, I got stopped. I got asked extra questions. I would get my luggage searched. I would get my person searched. It caused delays. It caused frustration. And I remember one time I was driving across the Canadian-US border with my friend, and we got asked all sorts of extra questions on the way there. And on the way back, they had us get out and they went through his entire car. And he's like, this never happens to me. And I'm like, yeah, it always happens to me. Welcome to my life. He's like, really? Every single time? Like, every single time. A couple times on the Eurorail, I actually called out the guard because they were letting people go from one train to another when they're doing the border crossing. But then they pulled me over and I just said, is this your Black check? And one of the guys just turned red and he said, look, I'm just doing what my boss told me. I said, and your boss told you to check the Black people? He goes, yeah. So this is a Black check. He goes, yeah, I guess. So I'm getting evidence. This is actually what's happening. It's not just me making stuff up. And then the worst part was when I was in Madrid, I finally crossed the border, didn't get stopped. I'm like, hey, things are looking up. And then an undercover officer comes and pulls me out of a crowd of tourists and says, show me your passport. So I showed him my passport and he goes, you don't have a visa. You need a visa to be here. I'm like, no, I don't need a visa. I'm from Canada. Canadians don't need a visa. He said, no, you need a visa. Come with me. And so I go with him and he throws me in a paddy wagon. Never been in a paddy wagon before, thank God. And so now I'm driving around the city and then he throws another Black guy in. I'm like, oh, okay. And then there's 10 of us, and they take us to jail to be processed. Processing also involves a strip search and an anal cavity search. Yeah. So I'm in line with these guys and I'm watching them. And the whole point is just to show us we're less than, that they're in charge, this to humiliate us. And I'm watching each person go before me, strip down, bend down. And my anxiety is building. And I'm getting ready to like almost freak out at this point. And then it's finally my turn. My clothes come off. And because of the state I was in, two things basically escaped my awareness. Number one, I was in the best shape of my life. I was a bodybuilder at the time. Number two was we were in view of the holding cell with the working girls. So when my clothes came off, that cell erupted. It was like, ooh, baby, looking good. I like what I'm seeing. So I had this cheering squad. And I'm like, yeah, this is not so bad. I'm not feeling humiliated. This is good. I could deal with this. Of course, then I spent the night on the concrete floor, and then I got the hell out of that country. When I got home, I was talking to one of my coaches, and he says, Shiraz, are you ready to step out of that story? Now, before I continue, I got to explain what stories are. You see, we all have these stories in life, and we feel we have good stories and bad stories, right? Good stories are like, I always find the best parking spots. Bad stories are like, my business never goes where I want it to. No one ever listens to me, or I find the wrong partners. And to our unconscious minds, there's no bad stories. And this is what screws up a lot of people. It's like, what do you mean there's no bad stories? No, they're all good stories. You just have to find out why they're good. So I'll give you an example. Money is something people come to me for a lot to help them improve their money situation. And we all think it would be great to make a lot more money. However, for most people, no, that would be a horrible thing. So let me explain why. Let's say you watch a rich person screw over a lot of poor people, and you're like, oh my God, I hate that. I hate that rich people just take advantage of poor people like that. Well, then your brain says, well, I never want to be that type of person. And what's something we can control out of that? Well, if we never make the money, we can never be that type of person. So let's not make money. And it puts a little building block of, this is why I shouldn't make money. And then one year you pay a lot in taxes, and you're like, oh my God, I hate paying this much in taxes. So your mind says, well, if we make less money, we don't have to pay this much in taxes. So you put another building block. Then you see someone working and working and working so that they can make lots of money. They're exhausted. They're stressed. They're frustrated. Like, oh my God, I never want to be like that. Well, if we don't try to make a lot of money, we don't have to worry about that, right? And then let's say your friends want to go out and do something and you don't want to do it, but you feel guilty for saying, no, I just don't want to do that. And then you realize that you can say, you know what? Sorry, guys, I can't afford it. You're telling the truth. The guilt goes away. And then your mind says, let's store this away for later so that we can keep it and not feel guilty when we say no to people. So we can't get the money because then we'll lose it. Then we'll be lying. So now there's another reason. Right? And so then you start pulling building block after building block, right? If I make a lot of money, people are going to come up and say, you know, can I have some? Can you invest in my company? Can you give to my charity? I'm like, I don't want to have those conversations. Your mind says, we don't have to. Don't have a lot of money. So can you understand here why a lot of people think they want money but don't actually want money? Right? So these are the blocks that are there that you're completely unaware of. And it gets worse because now you watch someone complain about how much money they lost. And you say, wow, well, thank God I don't have a lot of money because I can't lose that money. So now you get a fix of dopamine as you watch things play out that are reasons why you don't have money. Someone complains about how much taxes they do. A rich person screws over another poor person. And every time it happens, you say, oh, that's not me, thank God. And another hit of dopamine. And you're getting hit after hit after hit. But it gets worse. Let's say that you're struggling and you just pay off your bills at the end of the month. Right? And you're like, oh, thank God. Now, when that happens, it's not just that you get hit with dopamine. You get some adrenaline. You get some oxytocin. And so your whole body goes, whoo. That felt good. Let's do it again. So you unconsciously create struggle the next month so you can come out right at the end again and get that fix again. And it just keeps going. And it gets worse because eventually you build up a tolerance like any addiction. And that won't be enough. So your unconscious mind says, how can we make it worse? Maybe we'll make things worse during the month so we can come out. Or maybe we'll add illness. We have to struggle through that again or as well. Or maybe we'll cause family problems or make them bigger than they seem so it feels worse so we can get through. and you're making it worse and worse and worse. So you can see how this can cause all sorts of problems in your life. So that's what I'm talking about. There are good and bad, there are no bad stories, because although this physically feels horrible, unconsciously you're getting fixes. You're getting exactly what you want. You're getting out of situations of guilt and shame by creating the situation you are. And that's just with money. You have stories about all these different things in your life. So back to talking to my coach, Isra Shiraz, we've always talked about that story. And I am pissed. It's like, this isn't a story. This is racism. This is real. How can you tell me this is a story? He's like, Shiraz, okay, racism is real. Racism is horrible. It should not exist. However, what you're talking about is a story. I'm like, what? How is it a story? I get stopped. I get frustrated. I get humiliated. Like, I'm losing money. There's no upside. There's always an upside. There's always a payoff. What's my payoff? He looks at me, he goes, Shiraz, when you tell your border crossing stories, you light up. You feed off other people's emotional reaction to your stories. It feels like love to you. That's the fix you're getting. And you can't keep telling the same border crossing story because people will get bored with that story. So you have to keep getting stopped at borders so you have new material. I was like, damn, he's right. So I made a decision then, and I said, you know what? I'm not going to get love from my struggles, right? I am going to get love from my successes. And when I made that decision, I stopped getting stopped at borders. It just went away. And here's the other thing. Did you know that there are non-white customs agents? See, I didn't. Because I was unconsciously lining myself up with the white ones for maximum racism efficiency. I didn't know I was doing it. And what are customs agents programmed for? Look for something suspicious. What am I doing when I'm in the story? I'm wondering who's going to be the one to stop me this time. I'm looking around to see who's going to be that person to pick me out and stop me. So I'm acting exactly like the person they're looking for. So of course I'm getting stopped. I'm creating my reality from my stories. So when I let it go, I stopped getting stopped. And it all started from that one incident, which was just an incident. It wasn't a story at that point, where my friends had said, oh my God, we can't believe this happens to you when we got from Brazil. That was my first fix. And my body said, let's do more of this. So I want you to get, this wasn't a story about racism. This was a story about addiction. And if you have a consistent problem in your life, it's an addiction. You are getting a benefit out of it. If there's something you're complaining about constantly to people, you'll probably have the same addiction I have, where you're getting love from other people. So you have to keep creating that problem. But I've seen people with different situations. I have one client. Something went wrong every day. And he says, I don't know what's going on. There's something going wrong every day, like several somethings all the time, every day. I can't get away from this. And finally, I asked him, I said, do you see yourself as a problem solver? And he's like, oh, yeah, of course. That's my job. That's who I am. And I'm like, huh. What do you have to keep creating in your life to feel value if you're a problem solver? It's like, problems? I'm like, yeah. So what if we stop making you a problem solver? Because no, but I am a problem. I need to solve problems. I get, no. I'm not saying stop solving problems. I'm saying you can be a person that can solve problems, but don't identify solely as a problem solver, because then you need problems. You need them, as opposed to you can solve them. So when we shifted that belief, the problems went away. But here's what happened. 3 weeks later, he calls me up and he says, Shiraz, I had some problems today. I'm like, why do you sound happy about that? He goes, well, because the first week, there were no problems. I'm like, this is great. The second week, there were no problems. And there was a little bit of anxiety. I'm like, I'm so kind of used to it. And then the third week, I was full on anxiety. When's the next problem going to happen? And then it happened. And I'm like, yeah, because you were addicted. This is how it works. You don't think that there's a physical addiction there, that your body is hooked on chemicals, which is why we need to make sure you get out of it. So when you notice what the problem is and you see the addiction showing up, number one, forgive yourself. Don't go on, oh my God, you're doing this over and over again. Understand this is an addiction and say, okay, we need to get through the addiction. And when you are forgiving of yourself and accepting that this is a process, you will actually get out of the addiction quicker. Number two, remember that every problem in your life is the solution for an emotional issue that's going on. It's either you're getting a fix or you're avoiding emotional distress. So don't ask yourself, why is this happening to me? Why can't I solve this? Ask, why do I want this to happen? What am I getting out of this that I'm not seeing? And that change in your thinking can cause the answer to bubble up from your subconscious. And then you can solve it. For instance, I quickly went to $100,000 in my salary, in my businesses, but I could never get past 130. I would always fluctuate between 110 and 130. Couldn't figure out why. The one time I figured out how to do it about 10, 15 years ago, I figured out how to get to $1 million. And I even got into talks with Bob Proctor and with John Assaraf. And so I figured, this is it. I've got these people. I'm going to do $1 million a year from now on. And my salary went to zero. And that's because I didn't know it at the time, but my mind was freaking out because it didn't want to go to $1 million. I just didn't know why I didn't want to go to $1 million. And stayed down at $0 until I gave up on that $1 million. And it came straight back up to 100,000. This is my mind freaking out from emotional distress. And what was that emotional distress? When I was a teenager, my friends and my family used to talk about, Shraz, you're a really smart guy. You're really creative. When you get into business, we know you're going to be making millions of dollars. You're going to be living in a house on the beach. You're going to be traveling the world. And then we get to come hang with you, right? And then we get to travel with you. We're going to have so much fun. And my mind went, they're all going to leech off me. Oh, hell no. We can't let that happen. So my mind decided that, you know, 100,000, a little bit above is where I can be comfortable, but it's not enough that they can leech off me. So it kept me there. And when I decided I wanted to make more, it got as far away from that amount as it could to keep me safe. Once I realized that belief was there and I switched it and I said, look, if they ask me for money or if they ask me to hang out with me, I can say yes, I can say no with zero guilt either way. The next year, I did $200,000. And last year, I went up to $1 million in sales. And it was this one belief holding it all together. But of course, I had no clue to look for that. I was looking for, what am I doing wrong in business? What strategies am I not using correctly? Because I'm thinking it's a physical thing, not an emotional thing. Every consistent problem in your life is a solution for an emotional issue you're not looking for. And once you get this, your whole world can change. So the other thing I want you to get is you want to start training your brain to think the thoughts you want, not the thoughts that just keep showing up in your life. And you can learn to do this. It takes specific exercises that you can do, starting with learning to focus on a single thing for 30 seconds or more, right? There are brain training exercises that you can look up. There's some I teach. And this 30 seconds is crucial because it's not specifically 30 seconds. It's around there, but that's the good number. When you can hold a thought for 30 seconds, and then you can start doing visualization exercises for 30 seconds or more, including the emotions you feel, you will start rewiring your neural pathways to become the person you visualize. So if you want to speak and you're afraid of speaking and you're nervous about it, if you visualize yourself on stage from your point of view, so you're seeing through your eyes and you're feeling that confidence, feeling the love from the audience, then your mind starts to think, well, this is who I am. This is who I show up. And it starts rewiring your neural pathways so that you start actually showing up as that person. The hard part here, again, is the 30 seconds, because most people can hold a thought for 7 seconds or less, which is about the same as a goldfish. So I really want you to stop thinking like a goldfish. Okay. And this is really subtle how it works. So I'll give you an idea. Like, one of the first exercises I learned was to count from 1 to 10 with each breath and then back down. And I thought, 1 to 10 and then back, that's going to be easy. What happens with your mind is you're like, 1, 2, 3. This is easy. Oh, this is easy. Just lost it because I stopped thinking about the numbers. And these little things that just pop up, you try it again. You get to 3 and then you get past 3 and get to 4. Ah, made it past 3. Oh, that thought, lost it again. Right? That's how quickly it can happen. When you train your brain to just think consistent thoughts from a first person point of view, your mind can't tell whether it's real or imaginary. It thinks it's all real. And it's now programming you with real experiences to become who you want to become. So that's the next thing that's really important here, because it's both sides. You want to remove the beliefs that are keeping you from what where you want to go, and you want to train your brain, build your mental muscles to take you in the direction you want. And I know some people do one and some people do the other, but it's the combination that is really powerful that gets you the results you want. Right? So watch for the addiction. Remember, every consistent problem is a solution for an emotional problem you're not looking for. And then also train your brain. Like, do these exercises every day. I started doing these exercises years ago just because I wanted to have more focus and concentration. And I found out there are side effects. Right? So one of the side effects is you stay calm in crazy situations. It doesn't affect you as much. The other side effect is that people are naturally drawn to you from this state. So if you're okay with those side effects, then you know, do these exercises, look them up online, have a conversation with me. And they're very simple. And the thing is, it's only 30 seconds that you're looking for. So you can do like 2 minutes worth of exercises, and that's going to help you. Me personally, I start my day 15 minutes doing the exercises, get my day going. And it's just had such an effect on what's going on in my life. And one of the things that happened was we were talking about when you are failing. That came up during the networking. When I launched an event last year, I put $25,000 into that event, and I got zero sales in the event. And even a year ago, that would have freaked me out. But last year, because I put myself in the state, it was like, huh, that happened. What did I learn? What can I take away from it so I can do it better next year? And it was like a week after I thought about that, I was just like, wait, who am I? That would never have been my reaction before, but now that's who I am now. And as a result of staying in that space, I recovered the money very quickly, moved on, and just my business kept moving forward. We think that we have to act a certain way when something happens. Like, I'll give you an example. This is a kind of a cool example. Imagine that there are three guys standing in front of a crowd, and I come up behind them and I pull their pants down. The first guy, just like, his junk is exposed. He's like, oh my God. And he pulls up his pants. He may be traumatized. He's definitely embarrassed, and he runs away. The second guy, pants go down. He turns around, looks at me, goes, Shiraz, oh my God. Right? So then he pulls up his pants. He's slightly embarrassed, but he's just like, he's more frustrated and annoyed with me. The third guy, he's like, pants are down. Okay, you know what? I'm going to have to pull my pants up. I know you don't want me to. I know you're enjoying the view, but you know, laws and stuff. So I'll slowly put them, get a good look. Three people acting three different ways because of what they've been trained to think. If we're supposed to act a specific way, they would have all acted the same way. So you actually have control over which emotions you want to feel. Think about what emotions you've been choosing to feel. We'll say things like, we're going to Thanksgiving, Uncle Frank's going to be there. Oh my God, he's going to piss me off. You're deciding what emotion you're going to feel ahead of time. What if you decided that you're going to stay calm? What if you decided there might be a dip in your emotional state for a little while, but you'll just recover because everything just works out for you? That's one of my phrases that I use all the time. Everything always works out for me. And whenever something does, I anchor that in. See, everything works out for me. When it doesn't, I sort of dismiss it and go, well, that's okay, because it's all going to work out anyway, because everything always works out for me. And as a result, more and more things work out for me. And that's something I encourage you to start doing, right? It's not going into a place of delusion, but it's about anchoring in the good and letting the bad not affect you as much so that you create more good. And then you create that cycle and watch how things will change and change and change. So I hope this has been educational. I hope it's been slightly entertaining. And I look forward to talking to you, networking with you guys, and hearing more from you. I am Shiraz. I'm a reality interventionist, and I would like you to create the best reality you can for yourself. Thank you so much.
Thank you for participating in today's enlightening session of Catalyze. As we transition to our next expert, remember that each strategy and insight is a step toward becoming a transformative leader in your field. Visit ConnectedLeadersAcademy.com to stay engaged and informed. The journey of change is ongoing. Let's move forward together.